I think it's time to begin, so I'm going to go ahead and start. Since I'm doing classroom management, it would be embarrassing if we started late. My name is Nancy Lockett. I teach at Regents School of Austin. Actually, starting when I come back from this trip, I'm going to be a teacher trainer there, so I will no longer be in the classroom. But I've taught school for 38 years. And my approach to most things is just what I call common sense. So as we go through these things, if they're not common sense to you, I suggest you just discard what doesn't make sense to you to use. But these have worked for me for 30-something years, so I think a lot of my plans will work for you. First, I want to have you think for a minute. In all of history, I'm not aware ever that a farmer has gone out and planted corn, and then when harvest came, he got wheat. We have a garden at our school, and each class has a little section of the garden that we plant, and we have never planted beans and then sat there and wondered what was going to pop up. If we planted beans, we were going to get beans. And in Galatians, it says that God is not mocked, that we will reap what we sow. So sometimes as teachers, we know that rule, but when March comes, all of a sudden we look around and we wonder, why are these kids so disorganized? Why are they always turning in things late? Why are they so disrespectful? And that's a foolish question, because we're going to reap what we sow. When you speak to your students with an unkind tone of voice, when you race into the room late, when you ignore rules that you don't particularly want to follow, the tone of your voice, the look on your face, you're planting seeds in your students. So you shouldn't be surprised at what harvest you get. So that's what I want you to think about, and I'd like for us to pray before we begin. Heavenly Father, I thank you, Lord, that you love us and that you are patient with us. I pray, Father, that you would guide our conversation today, that you would open our hearts and minds to receive what is for us and to discard what we know is not for us. I ask that you would be with each one here, help them to rest and enjoy their time of fellowship together, and that we might be profited by what we've done today. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay. I have to get my notes organized. How many of you, I did the same talk in Austin last year. Were any of you there? Oh, good, because I had the same stories from last year, so. I tried to think of something new, but I felt like the ones I knew were the best for that occasion. How many of you are brand new teachers? Anyone, this is going to be your first year? Perfect, okay. I want you to think for just a minute how you make first impressions. I know at our school, it doesn't matter if you've taught 20 years somewhere else, you have to earn your spurs, as we say in Texas, and your first year at the school. And it's hard to go back and change a first impression. Usually it's not one thing that gives us that impression. It's a bunch of little things that give us an idea about what kind of a person they are, or whether they're the man you want to work on your car, or things like that. And sometimes we don't realize how important that is. Think about what you expected to see when you entered the hotel today or yesterday. I was impressed. I don't know about you, but I was impressed. But everything was in an orderly fashion. The waiters and the waitresses and the hostesses were all neatly dressed. The tables were laid out in a way that made sense. And that all gives us an impression that this hotel knows what they're doing. In the same way that if I thought, I could do this, I know how to pour water, I could organize this, but I really don't know anything about running a hotel, which would be apparent in just a few minutes. But sometimes we make the mistake as teachers or as educated people that we think, well, I have a degree in English, or I've studied history for years. That's not going to make you a good English or a good history teacher if you don't have classroom management skills. And in my years of experience, some of the teachers that have the most trouble are those who say, well, they didn't hire me to manage these kids, they hired me to teach history. But you don't get to teach if you can't get the kids to sit down and listen to you. So that's what we're going to talk about. A study that went over almost 50 years said that the number one determining factor in whether teachers are successful is whether they can manage their classroom. Not in how much they know about their subject, but whether they can manage the kids in their room. The first few hours of the first day of school is going to make a huge difference in whether or not you have a successful year. And that's part of what I want to talk to you about, is how to start off in a way that will be successful. You need to prepare yourself and your classroom just as if you were running a big corporation. Your job is just as important, or probably more important than that. What does God say about organization? He says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for men. So when you go into your room, you should have done it for the Lord. Do it for Him the way you would want it to be done. And in Corinthians, it says, everything should be done in a fitting and orderly way. I have to keep reminding myself, I'm serving the Lord, not 12-year-old kids. I also want you to remember that your kids, I say kids, maybe I should say children, your students in your class are going to use you as a roadmap. When they want to know, how does a godly man respond to frustration? They're going to look at you. How does a Christian woman dress? They're going to look at you. The kids pick up on every little nuance in what you do. If you get a memo that says you're going to have to go do something, and this is what I do, if you roll your eyes, they all see you roll your eyes. You're teaching them how to respond. And in the same way, you're teaching them how an organized, successful student spends his day. And so that's what I want you to think about. Okay, first of all, I'm going to tell you what I think classroom management is. Classroom management, for me, is just all the things that a teacher does to organize her students or his students, their space, their time, and the materials so that instruction and learning can take place. The characteristics of a well-managed classroom, one is that the students are deeply involved in their work. They aren't waiting for you to find the papers or to run to the workroom and run it off. You already know what you're going to do, you've decided it, and the students look to you for that guidance. The students know what is expected of them, and they're generally successful. You've trained them in all the necessary things that they need to do. They don't have to waste time with questions because you've already answered them. You've anticipated. And sometimes that's hard if you're new. I told a new teacher, you need to think ahead what they're going to ask. And she said, I would if I knew what they were going to ask. So, but after a while, you will know. You kind of know. Okay. And also, there's very little wasted time or confusion or disruption. The materials you need are there. The kids have all the supplies they need. Everything is unpacked and put away. And the climate in my classroom, what I hope for is that it's work-oriented, but it's relaxed. We're having fun. No one is stressed out. Okay, the characteristics of an effective teacher is that you work on having a well-managed classroom because you have a place for everything and everything in its place. Lots of times new teachers will say, oh, it doesn't matter to me where they put that. It needs to start mattering, because about December you're going to look around and realize this isn't going like I thought it would go. Another thing that a teacher does is she trains the students in what they're supposed to do. They know as soon as they walk in the door to your room what's supposed to happen next. And you're there to make it worth their while to do what you want them to do. The students are on task and working. They know what is expected. And probably one of the most important things is they're sure that you will notice what's going on in your room. I found a new term that's really an old term that is, to me, was perfect to describe what a teacher needs to be successful. And it was from a book, and I cannot remember the name. Back from the 70s, most of you weren't even born then, but it said successful teachers have with-itness. Now, if you think about that, I asked my sixth graders this year, I said, I read a thing that said successful students have with-itness. What do you think with-itness is? They knew exactly what it was. It said it's a teacher that's with it and knows what's going on. And then they said, you have with-itness. And the study showed that most teachers, once we get to the part where we're having to do some kind of discipline, pretty much handle it about the same. The difference was the teachers who are with it head off the problems before they get serious because they are with it. So keep that in mind. You need with-itness. But the bad news is, his belief was you either have with-itness or you don't. That you can't teach with-itness, but you can get better at it. Okay. Think about this. The successful teacher is ready for school to begin, and that means, ladies and gentlemen, you've got to get there before your students. At our school, we're supposed to be there at 7:30 or 7:25 in the morning. The students don't come upstairs or into their rooms until 7:45. I'm just an on-time kind of a person, but some of the teachers that have the most trouble, I have noticed they're not in the room when the kids get there. Well, that's a bad thing to start with. So you need to be there on time. Think about the message you're sending to your students when they're all in the room and you come racing in 5 minutes late. They don't have the teacher's handbook, but I swear they know exactly what time you're supposed to be there. They just know. And so whenever you come in carrying your cup of coffee or your Diet Coke, if you're me, what message are they getting about how important they are and how much you value your job? You need to be there prepared. Plus, you'll be much less flustered if you're already in the room when they get there. Okay. Now we're going to get down to the nitty-gritty. We're going to talk about procedures. And you can just wave at me if I'm not following the outline, because I have an old outline up here, so I'm trying my best. Okay. If you think about it, in anything you do, there are procedures. We follow them every day. We don't even realize we're doing it, but we know procedures. You know, if you flew here, even if you don't fly very often, you know the procedures. You know you don't just march to the front of the line. You get in line, you check your bags, you get on the plane, you sit down, you buckle your seatbelt. Everything is organized because you know the procedures. You know what you do when you go to a movie, when you check out at the grocery store. Really, procedures are kind of like just having good manners. When you say someone's ill-mannered, what you usually mean is they're not following the procedures. Whether they cut in line in front of you or they turn from the wrong lane, we all know the procedures. Okay. One of the things that you need to be sure in your classroom is that you have procedures that everyone understands and everyone follows. The only way you're going to get them to work is to practice them. And this is where I'm telling you, please don't think that kind of stuff doesn't matter to me. It will really matter to you in a couple of months. I sat down with one of my new teachers last year, a great teacher, a great guy, but such a young man. And I said, well, here's what I do. And I named all of my things that I do. And he didn't say, he was too polite to roll his eyes or anything, but I think he didn't really believe me. Well, about November or December, in our school, the whole sixth grade goes to fine arts at the same time. Some go to drama, some go to art, some go to music, but they all leave at the same time and come back together. So his door was opposite mine, and the kids are coming back up, and we're standing in the hallway between my room and his room, and he said, we're just talking, and he said, oh, these kids are getting rowdier and rowdier. And then he glances, and is now not always, but in general, as my kids are coming in, they know what we're going to do next. They sit down. They put their stuff away. They're getting whatever they need for the next subject out. And he looked in there, and he saw my kids doing that, and I'm standing in the hall with him, and I haven't said anything to him. He looked in his room. They're chasing each other around the room. They're tossing stuff back and forth. And he looked at my room again, and he said, I should have listened to what you said. So, and he started doing it. But it's really hard. One of my mottos is it's much easier to lighten up than to tighten up. So if you start out really expecting this, most of the time they follow along with it. Because most kids rise to the occasion, they do what you expect them to do. And if you're a teacher with itness, you can walk into a room of a teacher who doesn't have it. And I know you've experienced this, the kids all of a sudden act differently when you walk into the room. Because they know who they can get away with it with and who they can't. So that's what you need to remember. Okay, I'm going to give you what I do. You don't have to do any of these things, but they work. As far as entering the classroom, my rule is always, if I'm not in the classroom, wait in the hall. Now that will really make you be on time, because it's real obvious when there's 16 kids lined up in the hall. That means I'm not in there and I'm supposed to be. So that is one of my rules, and that way you're in charge. You're already in there. You're in charge. Things can go downhill in a hurry if they're in there unsupervised for even a couple minutes. Another rule for me is if my door is closed and the kids can see through the window, if there's another adult in there, it's so sweet to me. I didn't even tell them that rule. They don't come in. They know if I'm in the room and there's another adult in the room, they just stand in the hall. Once in a while, somebody will whip the door open. They always, and they close it. But part of that is the respect they have for me just in my demeanor with them. So I think that's a good rule. They just understand from the beginning. If you're in the room because sometimes you have a parent conference that goes long, my kids know to wait in the hall. The very first day of school, especially if you're new, you want to be their friend. And it's okay if you're their friend, But if you have to choose between being the teacher and the friend, always choose teacher. So when they come in, most of the time, new teachers don't want, you say, well, you know, they're kind of rowdy, but we're just getting to know each other. I'm a friendly, easygoing person, but if they come in rowdy, I will just say real quietly, I know you're excited because this is the first day of school, but why don't you go back out and come in the way you think you ought to? I don't fuss at them, but from that moment, they see I'm with it. They already know, whoo, you can't come in like that in this room. And it's not a big deal, and I don't say it in a fussy way, and I always say, I know you're excited, I am too, but would you go back out and do it again? And they almost always do. So if you set the tone, you usually don't have to get, I think if you have kids or you've taught it all, you know, kids test the waters to see what will fly and what won't fly. And I really believe that boisterous running in the room stuff is just to see what you're going to do about it. And trust me, if you're not going to do anything about it, they're going to take it up a notch. And it's a whole lot easier. If I ever have to send a kid out into the hall, because, which is very rare, one of my kids last year said, Ms. Lockett, you never send anybody out in the hall. Every teacher I've had sends kids out in the hall all the time. Why don't you send kids out in the hall? And this other little boy that was on the top of my list said, she doesn't have to. She has the look. Which is true. So when they start doing something, I'll just look at them like, I'm so shocked you would do that. And then honestly, when I go, they say, yes, ma'am. And they just stop. But that's because from the first day, you call them on those little bitty things in a nice way, and you don't have to get to the big things. So that is one of mine rules. Now, getting to work, a lot of this has to do with being there before your kids. On the board, before I leave every afternoon, I put down on the board what I want them to do when they walk in the door in the morning. I promise you, if you think you'll do it when you get there, you're going to have a flat tire. Or a parent's going to stop you in the hall. Something is going to happen. So before I leave, I put the homework assignments on the board for the next day, and then I put what I want them to do. And I really think it's important that you have something, they have to have something to do. If they just come in and mill around for 15 minutes, it's going to be a lot harder to get them going. So I always put on the board the homework for the day, and then I put my little bullet points. And it is always exactly the same thing. It will say, sharpen two pencils, copy your homework, and then the next thing will be whatever, these five math problems, or write your Bible verse or something like that. And I put it on there every single day of the whole year. About the last month of school, I was in a hurry, so I just put copy homework, do math. Half the class said, I need to sharpen my pencil. And I said, why didn't you sharpen them? Well, you didn't put it on the board. So I put it on the board I keep thinking, this is crazy, why am I doing it? But if I don't put it on the board, and they're 12, they say, well, you didn't tell us to sharpen our pencils. Okay, so that's what getting to work, and we're going to talk a little bit later. You need to have an organized way that every single class begins. I spend the first week of school practicing procedures, and one of them is, boys and girls, when I say, get ready for Bible, here's what I mean. You'll have this and this and this. Get ready for math. Here's what I mean. Because then I don't have to waste a lot of time like I see other teachers doing, saying, put that away. You don't need that. You need this. Or I didn't get that. And in my class, the book bags go out in the hall. If you choose to not get it unpacked on time, oh well, is what I say. Because they'll say, I don't have my math book. Well, you'll have more homework than the rest of us. So I just do it very practically. Because if you say, oh, well, run, get it, you're going to have them running to get something all the time. But once they know that if they don't bring it in, if they're not prepared, I hope you're a good listener because you'll have to do yours at home. And that sounds mean, but that's just the real world. And that's where I'm trying to get them ready for the real world. Okay, if you don't do what I'm going to tell you next, this is the easiest thing. I love this. And it makes so much sense to kids. It may not make sense to you, but it makes sense to kids. I explain to them from the first day of school that we have what I call my time and your time. And my time is when I'm getting ready to teach a class, when I'm sending you to another teacher. That's my time. It's not your time to waste. Your time is we're going to snack, we're going to lunch, we're going to recess. That's your time. Take as much time as you want. And I tell them that. So I'll say, for example, okay, it's time to go to lunch. We're on your time. And I just go sit down. And at the first of the year, usually they're wasting. You have to not care. I really don't care if they want to waste their time. I don't care whether they get 10 minutes of lunch or 30 minutes of lunch. It's their time. So I'll say, we'll go when you're ready, and I go sit down. And if this is going to work for you, you can't keep saying, I said, you got to get ready. You just have to be in your own zone. You don't even care if they get ready because it's their time. So I will sit down, and usually very dramatically, I'll take out some papers, and I'm grading. And a few of them will look, and they'll go, y'all, it's our time, it's our time. And then they get lined up quietly. And I told this to another teacher, and she said, you do not do that when you go to lunch. I said, I do it every single day. And she said, your class is always the first class in there. I said, I know. At first of the year, they were not. And when we go to lunch, sixth grade goes at the last shift. And on Fridays, they order pizza. And if you're the last shift on the last day, sometimes they run out. So I said to them, because they were taking an unusually long time to get there, and finally, there are just a few that are still not ready, and I said, you guys are the most selfless, considerate kids I've ever met. And they said, what do you mean? And I said, you're willing to let every other class go before us. That is so sweet. I just hope there's still pizza. And you know what? That was the last time we were ever late. Because it really didn't matter. And they've learned a valuable lesson. I had a class one year, we went outside. It was when I taught fourth grade, and we went outside for 20 minutes for a snack recess. And we always went outside at 10:10, and we always came in at 10:30. And I said, we're on your time. When you're ready, we'll go. Well, it took them forever, because ready for me is everybody's in line, everybody's quiet, the chairs are pushed in, the desks are cleared off, there's nothing on the floor. So they just messed around and messed around. I don't ever remind them, because I honestly do not care if we don't ever get outside. It doesn't bother me. It's air-conditioned inside. So finally, they got ready, and it was about, they'd wasted about 15 minutes of their 20-minute recess, which I didn't care. So I said, okay, you're ready, let's go. So we went outside, and I love this. So they're all running around playing, and in 5 minutes, I blew the whistle. And they still are not aware of what has happened. So the really naive little kids are running. I'm going, man, boy, that went by fast. And the wise kids are going, ah. So they get up there, and one of the kids goes, was this a shorter recess than usual? I said, no, we always come in at 10:30. He said, boy, it seems shorter. He said, it wasn't shorter than usual. I said, no, we always come in at 10:30. It's 10:30. And then he's still going, man. And I said, maybe it seems shorter because we didn't come out till 10:25. And I said, because y'all weren't ready. Never did I have to do that again. I'm telling you, that works if it's their time. But it doesn't work if you do like the mom thing. I told you, I'm not going to tell you again. I'm not going to tell you again. I don't tell them again. Because I tell them, I really hope you talk through the whole thing, because we can stay inside and I can grade papers and it's air conditioned. So there's no better way. But now they have to understand, if we're on my time, you better get in line and you better be quiet. And so that's the difference. Okay? Getting ready to change subjects. As I said, there shouldn't be a big transition time. Shouldn't take a lot if you've prepared them and practiced with them well. I always post for each day, and I do everything on computer now because it looks better. So I have them laminated, but I have the Monday schedule, and I flip it to the next day every day so they don't have to say, because if you've taught very long, what's next? What are we doing next? What is it time for such and such? They can look at the schedule. Plus, it helps me because I forget the schedule. So we look at the schedule, and they know what's next. And I think it cuts down if you can do every subject in the same order every day. We don't have fine arts or PE or Latin at the same time every day, so it may rotate. But my kids do know when we come back from fine arts, whatever the time is, the next thing we're going to do is always math. Or they know right after Bible, we may go to fine arts, but the next subject right after Bible is always going to be language arts. So I think it helps them get in the groove. So when they come back, they don't say, what are we doing next? What are we doing next? They already know what we're doing next. And they know, like I said, if we're going to have Bible, I will say on your desk, your copy of your Bible verse and your Bible, nothing else. And then you don't have to waste a lot of time telling them to put things away that shouldn't be out to start with. And I have a routine beginning for everything. But what I do say is, and they learn right away, if I'm taking longer for something than I thought, there's usually some little student who will say, excuse me, we're supposed to be doing such and such, or it's time for snack. And I just say very sweetly, you know, see, it's time for snack when I say, get out your snack. And so don't let them run the schedule, but try to follow it as much as you can. One of the things to keep their desks orderly, I think when I had younger kids, I did desk inspections, or I call it, y'all are going to think this is crazy, but they think it's funny. So I will call it my doodad detector. And if you're from the South, you know what doodads are. They're just doodads. There's junk that you have that you don't need in your desk. So I will go like this, say, okay, I've got my doodad detector out, because it's usually for boys, those little paper footballs, or for girls, it's pipe cleaner animals and all this junk. So I will go around and say, if I see that again, I'll know you want me to keep it. I'm not saying throw that away. I just say, if I see that again, I'll know you want me to keep it. And if I see it again, I'll say, yes, I will. And I just take it. Never had a kid ever complain. What you need to get, what I have, is a big box with a lid on it. And on the box, well, it's not, it's middle-sized box. And on the lid, it says, Mrs. Lockett's June box. Now, I named it a June box because I used to go to school until June. But my June box is where anything they want me to keep for them goes in my June box. And they get it back in June or at the end of the school year. So it cuts down. Sometimes it's not a status thing. They want something in my June box. But I'm not joking. Once it's in my June box, it's in there. And they don't get it back till the end of the year. And then I open it up and they remember everything that they took that I put in there from September. And a lot of times it's toys, or it's, sometimes it's notes, sometimes it's, for sixth grade girls, it's a lot of little hearts and things like that. But I keep it in there, and they don't get it back till June. I know some other teachers who have what they call a toy jail. And they even, like a shoebox with little paper bars on it, and they put it up high, and the kids can see those toys are in jail until, but I think that's cute, and they don't. And then you don't have to mess with it. And they never argue, because I don't say it in an unkind way. If I say, if I see that again, I'll know you want me to keep it. Well, if I see it again, I know they want me to keep it. So I do. I do the same thing if we're doing, let's say, Shirley Jingles, and some kids are way too cool to do them. And so I will say, here are your three options. When we do the jingles, you may say them from memory, you may read them from your book. If you don't choose those two, I'll know you would rather write them. And then I say, and because I love you, and they all will chorus, you'll say yes. So when we do the jingles, there's always one boy who thinks, I'm not going to do that. No one should ever dare me, because if you dare me, I'll do it. So when we started doing the jingles, and I gave him a lot of chances, I noticed he wasn't moving his lips. And then I noticed he didn't have his open, so he couldn't say I didn't know him, because one of his options was to read them. So I just got a piece of paper and laid it on his desk. I didn't stop the class, and I said, yes, you can. And he knew that meant, yes, you can write them, because that's what I'm asking to write them. And so he just wrote them. I've never had a student argue with me about that, because it makes sense to them. If you do this, I'll know you want me to do this. And because I love you, I'll let you do it. But part of that is being consistent. If I pretended I didn't see that because I didn't want to follow through, I don't think it would work. I had a little girl who kept drawing one day. Every time I looked at her, she was drawing on paper. And I kept saying, put that away, put that away, put that away. And so finally I said, if I see that out again in class, I'll know you want me to throw it away. So in a few minutes, I walked around and here she is drawing away. And I said, okay, I will. And I picked it up. Now this sounds mean, but I told her. I said, if you want me to throw it away, let me see it. So I just picked it up and dropped it in the trash. And she said, I have been working on that all day. I said as sweetly as I could, I know, that's why I was so surprised you wanted me to throw it away. Then she didn't argue, didn't she want me to throw it away? I said, if you do it again, I'll know you want me to throw it away. She wanted me to throw it away. So that's what I mean. That's just common sense. That's what I think works. So after we've done our doodad detector and the June box, every once in a while, just for fun, and I never tell them ahead, because to me, if you say, if you do this, here's what I'll give you, that's a bribe. If they're doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do, and they get a reward, that's very different. So once in a while, and this is how pitiful, mine are the little Starburst mints, or those little star, whatever you use, little red and white mints. And so sometime after school, when they're all gone, I'll just walk around, and if their desk is perfectly in order, no loose, whatever I've told them has to be, and you really need to say, when I say clean out your desk, because that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So I'm very specific. That means nothing is loose in your desk. Pencils are in your pencil box or something like that. Then I just put a little mint in their desk. And then the next day, if they see one, they think, well, they don't, surely they don't really think, but they pretend they think that the desk fairy has come. So, and I might do that 3 times a year. But they always, and then other kids will say, well, I'm going to clean my desk out tonight then. Will the desk fairy come again? I said, well, how would I know when the desk fairy's coming? I don't know who. So I don't do it as a bribe, but it does work. It's just fun. I think it makes it fun for them, and it's just a pleasant surprise. Okay. And also, as I'm walking around the room, and this is just a habit that I have, so as I walk around, if their desks are kind of whopper-jawed or kind of crooked, I don't even think about it. I just kind of nudge it as I'm walking around and kind of straighten it up. Before we leave the room, everybody's chair has to be pushed in, and the rows have to be straight. And so that's part of your time and my time. I don't have to tell them anymore. They just do that. But I've noticed that after a few weeks of me just gently pushing the desk as I'm walking around, they're doing it. It just gets into their heads that the rows should be straight. And so they automatically start doing what I do. When it's time to go home, we will not go home until there is not a, we call it finger sweeping. If you can pick it up with your fingers, that means it's not the janitor's job. So they go, because I've told them, why should the janitor have to get down on the floor and pick up your trash? The janitor is vacuums. They don't have to pick up your, so they have to get it, and we don't go. If there's a pencil on the floor, if there's a chair not pushed in, I just say, we're not ready to go yet, and they'll run around. They know what that means. If I've had a really sloppy class, and it only has happened once, after school one day, I looked and I saw a lot, and I mean, I'm picky. If I can pick up a scrap of paper with my finger, that's a problem. And so I gathered up all the stuff, and the next day I showed them all, like a paper clip, a pencil, this, and I said, you've lost 1 minute of recess for everything I find on the floor starting today. Never, ever have they lost a minute of recess. So it does work. It's part of what the standard you set from the very beginning. Asking for help. Make sure I'm following. Okay. What I do when they need help, it depends. I like kind of a looser class, so I don't, and this is up to you, I don't necessarily want them to have to raise their hand all the time if we're having an open discussion, but if they need help, they need to raise their hands, or you need a system. When we're doing math or when I'm helping edit writing, I use take a number, just like at Baskin-Robbins. So I just got one of those little spindles that you can get from Office Depot, and then I get those little paper key tags that are metal with little cardboard centers in them, and I number how many kids I have, 1 through 16. I put them in order on there, and so if they need help, they know you take a number. And that way, there's two purposes for me when I do that. I don't have a line of kids at my desk. They're not wasting their time, and I would rather them come to me, because if I go around to desk and try to explain a math problem to them, the kid beside them, if they're not on the same problem, to me that would be distracting. So they just take a number, and then I call their number, they bring it to me, I help them. By the time I get to number 5, almost always they say, oh, I figured it out. Of course they did. Because they know they cannot come to me until their turn comes. Therefore, if they've had to wait 5 minutes, almost always, if they just can't figure it out, I say, leave enough space for that problem and keep going. So they're not wasting their time. They can't just stop on problem 3 and wait for 15 minutes for me. So I always say, take a number. They love doing that. And it's simple. And I do the same thing if they have a question about anything else, because a lot of times they just don't want to do their work. And so they're like to stand in line for 10 minutes. And then you'll have a line jumper. And